not gone yet?
I think I'm the last on the list. Alito, my name is Aaron Ishkomapile. I'm a member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma and a doctoral student in the College of Education's program in higher education leadership. And I think that's the last of our group. Brett, have you had the opportunity to go?
I have, yep.
Oh, yes.
Karina, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, totally. Hi, I'm Karina Mendez Perez. I am the vice president for GSA.
Perfect. I think that makes all the students. Would the administrators please like to go? Dean Lilly, would you like to start? You're muted.
Yeah, I'll start and I'll popcorn over to Jim. I'm Sansia Reagans Lilly. I'm the Vice President for Student Affairs and Dean of Students, and it's wonderful to see all of your faces this morning.
Hi, I'm Jim Davis. I'm the Vice President for Legal Affairs, and I see Dan Jaffe on the screen. I'll pass it to Dan.
Hi, this is Dan Jaffe. I'm the Interim Executive Vice President and Provost, and I'm not seeing who else is here.
I'm still
President
here.
I'm still here.
No, the real President Hartzell is here.
I feel like the last kid picked when I used to grow up playing sports. So I'm Jay Hartzell, and I guess I'm on my second morning as president. So it's good to see you all, and thanks for coming out.
Great. Well, I know we have a lot of guests today, so one, I appreciate y'all spending the time to come today. But I guess for the interest of time, we'll get right into it. The first thing on our agenda is regarding the remains. So in order to just kind of start this conversation off, President Hartzell, do you have some initial, I guess, words, and we can give the floor to the students in the student group?
Yeah, thank you, Winston. And what I might do very quickly is hand it over to Jim Davis. I can tell you that this issue is something that we've been working on, trying to do the right thing, trying to find the right solution for everybody, and haven't taken lightly. And it is enmeshed in various levels in legal questions and other things. So maybe I'll stop. And Jim, do you want to say a few things about kind of where we are today?
Yeah, this is a really tough question. We have this federal law passed in 1990. That is intended to drive repatriation of remains to lineal descendants of those remains, and is really particular about not getting that wrong. Don't deliver important ancestral remains to someone who doesn't have a claim for it in exclusion of somebody else. And we have a circumstance here where we have remains that, because of their context of how they were found, when they were found, and the grave goods along with them, don't indicate that they belong to any particular group. And we have Caddo Tribe of Oklahoma and Alabama Coushatta all telling us they object to delivering the remains to the Macon Garza Band because they claim that it's not enough of a lineal relationship between that band and these bones. What Jay Hartzell's wisdom was to the legal team, a lawyer sometimes get very binary. We hold it, we give it, we repatriate. And Jay Hartzell's wisdom was, can't we separate out the idea of reinternment from repatriation? Isn't there a way we can deal with the problem of remains that don't have a real tie to a particular person but still deserve to be reburied and consecrated again? And so under that direction, we are still moving that way. And there is a process for that. And that's the next step of that federal law is how can you, and there is a way, create a committee of thinkers around the topic through the lens of this national federal law to drive towards reinternment. And that's the goal that we're pushing towards, because the Dr. Garza and his letters are powerful. They're important. They're important culturally and from a religious perspective. And there is no interest at the university of not honoring the indigenous people and the indigenous remains in the way that Dr. Garza would like. We want to make sure we're doing it in a way that doesn't cause a violation of the federal law and also cause conflict among the various indigenous groups that have an interest in this particular set of remains. So that's the path we're on, and that's the path that President Hartzell has urged us to go figure out.
Perfect. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, President Hartzell. Yes, would any of the guests like to speak, whether it's just expressing their thoughts or asking questions?
Hi, we've actually prepared a presentation, so if we could start with that, it would be awesome. And it's going to begin with Iman giving a land acknowledgement.
Good morning to all again. Before commencing this meeting, we would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on Indigenous land. Moreover, we would like to acknowledge and pay our respects to the Carrizo and Comecrudo, Gualitecan, Caro, Tonkawa, Comanche, Lipan Apache, Alabama Cushata, Kickapoo, Tigua Pueblo, and all the American and Indigenous, all the American Indian and Indigenous peoples and communities who have been or have become a part of these lands and territories in Texas here on Turtle Island. Be back to Cheyenne.
Thank you. Okay, hello everyone. We're so excited and thankful to be here with you all today. We would like to start off by congratulating President Hartzell on your newly recognized role, as you previously mentioned. This group is composed of NICE and NYPA, the undergraduate and graduate Native and Indigenous organizations here on UT's campus. I also would like to start off by recognizing the difficulty in compressing this information into a small window of time, which emphasizes our lack of platform and was taxing emotionally, mentally, and physically for all of those involved. And despite how thorough our attempt is today, these conversations deserve to take up more space moving forward to understand the importance, the weight, and nuance of our culture and experiences. Today, we will discuss how keeping the Miacan Garza Band's ancestral remains impacts this campus and UT's relationship with Indigenous peoples. We will then discuss this issue in a wider context, the legal arguments, the human rights arguments, our elders, and the work being done here on campus. Our main goal of this meeting is to ask the UT administration and President Hartzell directly to commit to returning the remains to the Miacan Garza Band. And we ask you to hold all questions until the end, as we've spent an extensive amount of time preparing this presentation. We were going to start with introductions in our native languages, but since we have already done that, we will go on to student impact, which is Aaron.
Thank you, Cheyenne. I'd like to take a moment just to emphasize the importance of this situation to our campus's Indigenous student population. This is my topic because it syncs up with my dissertation research, which focuses on Native American experiences in higher education settings. UT Austin is one of three institutions where I've been doing my research, which has been ongoing since about 2018. So my hope now is to share some insights drawn from the data about how this case impacts our campus's Native American community. So long before the repatriation issue was even on the students' radar, the narrative was that UT doesn't care about Indigenous students. This point came independently from several of my research participants. They feel invisible, often lost, and that their values are regularly dismissed on campus. Now, a year ago, the story that was developing from the research was how, though the university overall wasn't a healthy place for Native people, there were divisions within it that were supportive. Native American Indigenous Studies, of course, but also the College of Education, the School of Social Work, Housing and Dining were mentioned. Housing and Dining is an interesting one. That actually comes from Dr. Lee Walters, the retired associate director over there. He also served as the CEO for the nonprofit Great Promise for American Indians, which puts on the Austin Powwow. And I'll just note that he's given me permission to share parts of his story today. Dr. Walters talked about how in both of these roles, he would travel around the country, and he would often have the chance to try to recruit Native kids here. The response he typically got was, "Why would I go to UT Austin? There are no Indians there." Native students represent only 0.1% of our student population. Compared with institutions such as Dartmouth, which has 4% Native students, 0.1% is shocking, especially considering the fact that Texas has the fifth largest Native American population of any of the states. Native kids simply don't feel like they belong here. Here's the concern. The story of UT withholding these remains appeared in Indian Country Today, a national publication important to Native communities. I've been reading it since I was a kid. This is going to keep spreading. This could become the story of UT in Indian country. This will be what Native people think about when they think about our university. Now, the campus Native community has some incredible momentum in this moment, but failing to return these bodies to the ground would make it a lot harder for Native kids to come here in the future. And I'm serious about that. Native kids at UT right now have energy. They're advocating, they're learning, they're putting a lot of work behind something that we find important. There's an educational benefit to sort of supporting your students by saying yes to this. You have the opportunity to help change the story. The legal issues can be made to work. As we discussed a little bit ago, the federal government has already allowed the exact same arrangement between the Mia Kingarzas and Texas State University. The legal stuff can work. Instead, consider what your help would mean for Native students. If nothing else, we ask you to do this because saying yes would strengthen this part of your community, and saying no would devastate it. Yakoki. I'm now going to pass things on to my colleague Morgan, who is going to talk more in depth about the Indigenous campus experience here at UT.
Sego, Sego, hello everyone. Today, I am tasked with the job of delineating UT's relationship with Indigenous peoples here on campus and in the greater Austin area. However, UT does not have a relationship with its Indigenous students, faculty, staff, or community members. This is in part due to the lack of Indigenous students on campus and the university's unwillingness to recognize us as an established minority group. UT has a total population of about 0.163% American Indian or Alaska Native students and 0.118% Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander. This percentage is an anomaly compared to the percentage of other races and ethnicities represented on campus. While this staggering percentage speaks for itself on paper, myself and many other Native students sitting here before you today feel this number manifest itself in our daily lives. The program designated for Native American and Indigenous Studies is the least funded program on campus. Not only this, we have an even smaller percentage of Indigenous professors that teach at UT, whether they are associated with the program or scattered throughout the various colleges on campus. While this is a stark reminder that we are underrepresented and undervalued as scholars, we experience anti-Indigenous sentiments perpetuated by non-Indigenous students and faculty alike. I took a cultural anthropology class my first semester at UT. I had to sit through videos and lectures where violence against Native peoples was a joke and reinforced intergenerational trauma that I carry from when my family was sent to residential schools. I had a professor tell the class, "Happy Columbus Day." When I told the professor that it was actually Indigenous Peoples Day, they said, "I'm British, I don't care." In another class, a professor compared the rhetoric one would use to talk to a group of white people versus a group of Aboriginals about Western medicine. To my horror, racist sentiments were echoed by students in the class. There are countless instances where I've experienced anti-Indigenous sentiments from students and faculty, and these aren't isolated incidents. It is a common theme that many of my peers have experienced as well. Our undergraduate and graduate student groups are also severely underfunded, with NAIC being the least funded organization in the Multicultural Engagement Center. We are expected to put on a show for ourselves and the white gaze with little financial assistance while we are mocked in the process. Last year, during NAIC's annual opening event, several students imitated, recorded, and demeaned our elders, Dr. Garza and Maria Rocha, as they were giving a blessing. We are given very little space to build community with one another. And without fail, that space is violated by racist remarks and ignorance. Why would Native students want to come to UT when its reputation is stained with anti-Indigenous sentiments? Normal college students don't have to take an exam at 3 and later fight for their relatives to be returned for reburial at 4. if UT truly embraces diversity, equity, and inclusion, you will take the necessary steps to build a relationship with Indigenous peoples on campus and beyond. As a highly regarded institution, UT ought to set the precedent for advocating for its Indigenous students. This is a continuous process. However, we encourage and want an ongoing dialogue with the administration. Live up to the land acknowledgement that you adopted, which starts with repatriating the remains and continues with building a better relationship with Indigenous students. Yahweh, thank you, and I will pass it on to Azucena, who will talk about the wider context of grave robbing.
Thank you, Morgan. In the U.S., we have a long history of grave robbing of Native remains. This dehumanizing tradition is justified by claims of advancing scientific knowledge through the study of these bodies. And that is exactly the problem, that the bodies of Native peoples are perceived as objects of study rather than the remains of human beings who deserve to rest in a manner deemed appropriate by their living relatives. This type of objectification and commodification of human remains is something no other group of people has to contend with. This demonstrates the continued marginalization, attempted erasure, and dehumanization of Native and Indigenous peoples in the U.S., a colonial legacy which we are asking UT to discontinue. We ask UT to lead by example and act in a manner of equity and justice for Native and Indigenous peoples. Since the passing of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, universities across the country have returned remains to Native peoples back to tribal nations. This includes universities such as Yale and UCLA, and locally Texas State University, who in 2017 and earlier this year in March of 2020, repatriated the remains of ancestors back to the Miakan Garza Band of the Guahuiltecan people. We ask that UT Austin, as a leading university in the country, take just action and repatriate the remaining three bodies of the Miakan Garza Band relatives. This action is a step towards recognizing the full humanity of Native and Indigenous peoples and our right to a burial that respects the dignity of our lives and our afterlives. Thank you. And now I'll pass it on to Iman.
All right. So the university argued in June that the request was denied because the remains were not, quote, culturally identifiable. However, Gualitecan is a collective name for the bands of Native Americans who lived in Central and South Texas in the 16th century before Spanish conquest. Now, much of our history was erased as is, and our identities are passed down through generations, through traditions and customs. And with all due respect, Mr. Davis, I know you mentioned that other tribal affiliations are denying the remains to be identified as Gualitecan. However, this overall disrupts the deceased's journey to receiving the peace and rest they deserve. We also received legal recognition from Texas.
Iman,
yeah. Paste the link to that in the group chat. And since now NAGRA does apply to non-federally recognized tribes, as evident by a Texas State case and according to a U.S. Senate report. Therefore, the remains must at all times be treated with dignity and respect. Congress also acknowledged that human remains and other cultural items removed from federal or tribal lands belong in the first instance to lineal descendants, Indian tribes, and Native Hawaiian organizations. Overall, I still feel that the university does a poor job with the protection of Indigenous students, both living individuals living and deceased. As Morgan mentioned, as of fall 2019, we counted for 0.1% of the overall student population. I'm aware that no one in the administration is of Indigenous instead of Indigenous descent, but I still find it disrespectful how students, both undergraduate and graduate, still feel unprotected at an institution where we consider second home, spending a portion of our lives here and spending money to receive an education. As mentioned before, this institution is built on Indigenous land, and what the institution can do to start help bettering ties with the Native and Indigenous students from here on is by returning these remains and assisting the programs that need the most dire help. Thank you, and I'll pass it on to Pablo.
Thank you, Iman. President Herzl, right now we have a global consensus in indigenous issues. I mean, United Nations Declaration of the Right of Indigenous People from 2007. Specifically, in Article 12, we can find indigenous people have the right to manifest, practice, develop, and teach their spiritual and religious tradition. And also, the right to the use and control of our ceremonial objects and the right to the repatriation of our human rights. This is the reason why we are here today, to explain a little bit our history, but not just our history, it's our sentiment and as indigenous students here at UT. So I think we invite UT to consider this global consensus in indigenous issues and in global community, and to talk and to invite to talk with Miakan Garzaban. So that is the point I would like to add. United Nations Declaration on the Right of Indigenous People. I would like to pass to Aaron. Thank you.
Thank you, Pablo. I'd like to take a moment to more deeply address the specific challenge that's been voiced from the Alabama Coushatta and Caddo Nations concerning UT partnering with the Miakan Garzas. I'll note right off the bat that they had the same response to the Texas State case and nothing came from it. Unfortunately, their arguments fit within a wider history of federally recognized natives delegitimizing non-recognized groups. But that thinking is quickly becoming relic. These views are changing. People from both tribal and detribalized communities are moving beyond these labels. We're building bridges in this century. And besides, it's not the law. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act now allows remains to go to non-federally recognized indigenous people. Again, that's why the agreement between Texas State and the Miakan Garzas was approved at the federal level. The Alabama Coushatta might have complaints, but those complaints are not the limitations of the law, nor are they the reality on the ground for indigenous people at this university. And I'm saying this as someone coming from one of those federally recognized communities, with a name that has legacy in this world. My family has generations of experience working for a tribal government. Most notably, my uncle Gregory Pyle served as chief of the Choctaw Nation for over 16 years. He was the elected leader of the third largest federally recognized tribe in the country. And I'm here to say that the indigeneity of the Miakan Garzas is just as valid as my own family's. They are the most active Native American group in Central Texas and have been for a long time. Their family has been in this area since records were kept, which means they go back a lot further than that. And they've proven incredibly important to UT students over the years. A lot of the tribe's activity is through their nonprofit arm, the Indigenous Cultures Institute. Their programs include an Indigenous summer camp in San Marcos, which is free to the local youth. Several students from UT Theater and Dance and the College of Education work that program. They put on a major powwow, a huge annual festival of Indigenous culture. That event is staffed by students from both UT and Texas State. So UT really needs to keep up with the Bobcats here. UT students have been volunteers, interns. Several have held paid positions in their programs. And they come to our events, sharing their experiences, building opportunities, and importantly, opening up relationships to the wider intertribal world. Our community engages with the Miakan Garzas often and in critical ways. They are one of the big avenues for connecting with and developing our own indigenous identities. We know from the world of higher education research that engagement with one's culture and being part of a community are critical for first-year retention. We also know from the scholarship that this is particularly important for Indigenous youth. The Miakan Garzas have a long history of serving this role for our campus's Native students, and your support would be not only a powerful way of supporting them, but a powerful way of supporting us. Yakoki, I'm now going to pass things along to Judith to share more about some of the distinct aspects of our community here on campus.
Thank you, Aaron. UC's Indigenous community is composed of both undergraduate and graduate students who are from federally recognized tribes, state-recognized tribes, Indigenous to Avialala, Indigenous to the borderlands, Indigenous students who are not federally recognized or detribalized. Some Indigenous students at UT have been living in Texas for generations and have been labeled Hispanic. Other Indigenous students at UT migrated to the U.S. or are children of parents who migrated to the United States and are labeled under the category Hispanic. Scholars have also documented how people in the Southwest and borderlands underwent multiple processes of racialization imposed by the federal government and federal laws. As Indigenous students at UT, our experiences nuanced and challenged static and romanticized conceptions of what it means to be Indigenous. Indigenous people are not a monolithic, and our own existence in this university challenges outdated ideologies that rely on settler colonial logics of who is Indigenous and hence who is an official ancestor. This is where we find our strength as a community in embracing our experiences, but also being in respectful and responsible relations with our Cahuiltecan relatives, elders Dr. Garza and Maria Rocha and the Miacan Garza Band. These elders have been leading very important work in revitalizing and helping youth who have been labeled as Hispanic reclaim, remember, and continue to embrace their indigeneity. For many of us, their work has also inspired and contributed to our own personal and academic work. One of the biggest strengths of the UT Indigenous community is unsettling and disrupting categories such as Hispanic and Latinx to think critically about Latinx indigeneity. UT Indigenous students, with the guidance and support from elders such as Dr. Garza and Maria Rocha, have created programming and initiatives to bring Indigenous perspectives to the forefront to share with each other and educate our UT community. These programs include the Land Pedagogy Series with the Faculty Innovation Center, Quechua and other Indigenous language classes, and the Green Fund to ground environmental education and Indigenous ways of knowing and being. Funding for these programs is competitive and are examples of the contributions of Indigenous students to the UT community. Thank you. And now I pass it on to Jessica.
Thank you, Judith, for stating the diverse Indigenous community we are a part of here on campus. I, as a descendant of Nahuan Purapecha Indigenous peoples from Guerrero, Mexico, in movement, now a graduate student at UT, I have maintained and created new relationality surrounding the Indigenous territories I am now a part of. As part of the Native American Indigenous Studies portfolio and co-organizer of Land Pedagogy Workshop at the Faculty Innovation Center as NIPA co-chair, I have established a relationship with Dr. Mario Garza and Maestra Maria Rocha, both who have greatly supported the Indigenous student community here at UT Austin. Based on the realities of our Indigenous body here at UT, we would like for you to not hesitate to dialogue with our elders about the request to return three of their remains. Their reality as a non-federally recognized tribe is similar to the realities of many students on this campus, including my own. We are a part of our Indigenous kaleidoscope on this campus, in Texas, and in this nation. With this, we would like to present to you a letter in support of the Miacan Garza Band request that is being circulated around campus. And I am pasting the link on the chat. This letter showcases a tremendous amount of student supporters, Indigenous, non-Indigenous, allies, student organizations on campus and with community members, both in the broader Texas area, with so far 584 supporters. President Hartzell and all of those of you present here from the admin can witness the bonds and the beautiful and diverse collaboration that we have built as Indigenous students here on campus despite all other adversities. We are committed to envision a future where we engage in acts of respect, reciprocity, and freedom to all of our ancestors and for those coming generations. We believe that the University of Texas at Austin, as a flagship institution, has a responsibility to create positive change with and for Indigenous peoples and communities on campus, locally, and at an international level. We believe that the University of Texas at Austin has the intellectual obligation as a leading educational institution to amplify the dialogue on decolonizing practices, on Indigenous student diversity and inclusion and retention. This is only the beginning of a future we are interested in building together. And now I'll pass it on to Juan.
Thanks, Jessica, for mentioning the support of our folks around campus. To start wrapping up, I would like to mention that this issue is not just from our northern sisters and brothers, as Pablo mentioned it before. We Indigenous from Central and South America are still fighting to not just be the research object. In my case, as an international and Indigenous student from Guatemala, it affects me. However, I believe in the UT signature motto, meaning what starts here changes the world. It is worth mentioning that being part of the best Latin American program in the world, Lilas Benson, and having faculty involved directly to the Native American and Indigenous Studies Association, returning the ancestral human remains to the Miakan Garza Band is a historic and ancestral, is a historic opportunity to shift broader conversations around institutional responsibilities to the Indigenous communities, not just here in Central Texas, but it will start a legacy to our other institutions around the US and Latin America, and what not say worldwide. So let's change history together. So finally, I'll pass it to Cheyenne.
Thank you. We would like to reiterate our gratitude for meeting today. We are thankful for your time and energy and attention to such a sensitive issue. And to close, NICE and NAPA deserve our own space in decision-making as two of the only Indigenous organizations on an anti-Indigenous campus. We are repetitively relying on those with more privileged platforms to be heard and supported, and this meeting is no exception. While this may be a moment for you all today, it is critical to recognize that we have been working tirelessly to be in this space for generations. While you mentioned that you have been working on this matter, we urge you to reassess what this issue, waiting period, and process means to the students sitting before you today. We are inviting you to recognize the land acknowledgement and this meeting as the first step in our relationship. To strengthen this relationship, we would love for anyone here to join us during Indigenous Peoples Week happening the week of October 12th, and I would be happy to disperse the details in whichever format works best for y'all. However, we also deserve action today from y'all's side. From the administration side, how will UT take next steps to rightfully returning the remains, as well as foster a meaningful relationship moving forward so that these conversations can continue? We would like a committee of students, faculty, and staff to continue examining this issue, as well as a meeting with this group in the spring. And we would like to know who will be responsible for setting up these next steps. Okay.
Sorry. President Hartzell, just as a quick time check, I've shifted the agenda so that we'll have 10 more minutes just so that we can wrap up with some committee business at the very end. But thank you so much for the presentation y'all just gave.
Great. Yeah, thank you all very much. You know, I find your remarks well-prepared, thoughtful, inspiring, challenging, and you know, I hear you on the challenges that our campus has presented to you as a group and individuals, and I hear you on the fact that we all have work to do as a community. Nobody certainly wants to have a campus where people don't feel welcome and honored and respected, and it's my sincere hope that as we go forward, we can all do better in that dimension. So I look forward to future conversations. I know this is my first as president, but to your point, Cheyenne, it will not be our last. So we will keep in touch and figure out ways to do better as we go forward. I also hear you on the fact that this question of the remains in the Macon Garza Band are particularly sort of a challenge in their own right, but also a broader symbolic or somewhat metaphorical issue for the way that Indigenous peoples are perceived and treated by the university. So I hear you on this, the importance of this particular issue in the broader context of how we can continue to do better. So I started and as Jim said, you know, our full intention is to find a lawful way to return the remains and to intern them properly. So our plan is to appeal to the federal government and to find a way we can do so within a legal interpretation that we believe is that we're comfortable with. So that'll be our next step. We're not going to just rest on the matter. So we're going to take a proactive step of trying to find guidance from the government in a way that we can be comfortable with as a university that we're acting lawfully. So, Jim, is there anything I missed as far as next steps that from your side?
No, other than you've told us to move quickly, and we will.
And on the side of shared governance and the committee recommendation, I will reach out and work closely with Dr. Moore. My understanding was that we had a committee. We used to, and it met frequently, and I know there was a representative from my office participating, Virginia Larson. So I will reach out. And who's the contact? Which representative, or is there an email? If you'll post it in chat, I'll work with Dr. Moore, and we'll follow up with you and continue the dialogue and regular conversation. Do we leave anything in terms of follow-up action today? I will continue the dialogue. You now understand the actions as we move forward to address the request. Did I forget anything? Okay, so I'll follow up. Just post it in chat, or I'll follow up with Winston Onaga to get the contact and learn more about the organization that used to exist. And let's see if we can get that. Let's get that going again, and we'll work together as we move forward, for sure. Thanks for presenting today.
Excuse me. Any follow-up questions or last thoughts?
I just have a quick question for President Hartzell. Will you meet with us in the spring? I really just want a definitive answer. So will you meet with us in the spring?
Let me take that one, Jay.
Go ahead.
President Hartzell, if you don't mind. So just before many of you joined, I shared with Winston that our office, on an annual basis, we put together a student engagement curriculum. We put together multiple meetings and opportunities for the president to meet with students. And so you're certainly on that list, and we're coordinating with your office, President Hartzell, and yes, you're on that agenda, on that a part of that curriculum.
I'm glad you said that, Dean Lilly. I was a little worried because I was going to say yes, and then you were going to say, no, you're not.
Yes,
so,
no, you are.
So,
you are.
Morgan, yes. It's a fair question. Honestly, I'm not sure with whom the president regularly meets yet, so yeah. I'm still learning as I go.
Yeah.
I'm also figuring out what the right formats and cadence to those meetings are. But as I said, this will not be our last meeting. Thank you.
Good question, Morgan. Good advocacy.
I also had a question, too, if that's okay. I don't want to take up too much space, but President Hartzell and Mr. Davis said that you all were in conversations with representatives from the federal government to discuss returning the remains. So I was just curious, after the presentation, what the timeline of those conversations were going to be. I think the date that we had discussed was hopefully by this Friday. There may be some answer, but I don't know if that has changed.
There's a process in the regulations under NAGPRA that allow for a group to be formed to decide how to reinter remains. We're going to trigger that process promptly. We're working on the paperwork to get that done quickly. But it's been given to us as priority from President Hartzell to move that forward. We'll be done by Friday. I don't know, but it's on the top of our list to get done quickly. We need to make sure we're getting it done out in a way that doesn't. You know, if you do things too quickly sometimes in the process world, you can cause it to be slower if you don't get all your T's crossed and I's dotted. And that's what we want to make sure we're creating a process that can get to a conclusion as quickly as possible so that the remains can be reinterred properly and within the boundaries of that process. Did that answer your question?
No, go ahead.
As far as the timeline and updates that arrive with each step in the process, how can we be plugged in so that we better understand what's happening behind the scenes as students who the issue directly affects?
Yeah, I'm open. I think maybe Dean Lee, through your office, we can go through you. And now, you know, we have contacts here on the, they see on the chat. So it'll flow from my office through Dean Lilly's office to get back to you all.
And I'll follow up. I have, Morgan, I think your email address, and also is it Jessica's, I think. And so I'll follow up, but I'm certain Dr. Moore will want to be on point as well. So we'll look back. I'm going to send you to an email right now so that you have mine, and then we'll look back for sure. Okay, Winston, I think it's on you.
Perfect. Well, thank you all so much for taking the time and coming to speak and preparing such a well-thought-out presentation. We do have 10 minutes left to discuss other committee business. So thank you so much for the time, and I hope you'll have a great day and a great weekend. So if you feel comfortable leaving the Zoom so we can continue, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Great job.
Thank you.
I mean, with all due respect, I understand that this is such it's an incredible movement. We just want to ensure that y'all on your end will keep y'all word. As a former member of student government, executive assistant to the president and vice president back last year of student government, I understood that when it came to taking initiatives with certain situations and meeting with then President Fenves, there was some bumps in the road. And I understand we're under new administration and rule now. So again, I just want to ensure that though we are taking great initiative together today with this meeting, that y'all will continue to upkeep your promise, as this has been something we've been battling for many years, and not just on top of that, just generation-wise. So again, we thank you for your time and consideration. We just would like to be updated on a regular basis.
That is a fair and reasonable request. Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you, everyone, for meeting. We'll head out, but we hope to hear from you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all so much for being open to listening to that. I know our agenda has shifted a little bit, so I just wanted to run through the rest of the things very, very quickly. Obviously, Anika isn't here today, so I'll try my best to say it in her words. But essentially, moving forward, we will be shifting our structure a little bit. Obviously, giving time to check in and ask any bearing questions on our mind, but also keeping in mind that each LSO also has those meetings to have those space to do that. But in regards to the PSAC structure moving forward, we'll start with introductions, have any campus conversations that are pressing on our minds, like I mentioned just a second ago. And then we have broken up into committees to update and work on specific campus issues in different areas, followed by question and answer, and then administrator updates. So in terms of the committees that we've formed, we split them up into three different areas. One, academic life, student life, and then health and wellness. So I guess just to kind of go through it really quickly, can someone on the academic policy or academic life committee just speak really quickly on kind of their specific goals?
Are you referring to the academic affairs committee?
Yes, that's what I meant.
We have a student life and academic affairs, and I still get confused. But yeah, so there's four major issues so far that we've identified that we want to work on for academic affairs, which are equity and inclusion in the classroom, making research opportunities for students more accessible, focusing on test optional admissions, and then also lastly, SSD accommodations. I don't know if we have time to give like a really brief, like one sentence description of each of them or not.
Go ahead.
Okay. Alyssa, do you want to do the first one about equity and inclusion in the classroom?
Yes. Yeah. So
Equity and inclusion in the classroom is a super broad topic, but in the past, especially in Senate, there have been discussions about if there is a mechanism that students can use report is too strong of a word, but to open up discussions about professors who really do make an effort to make their classrooms more equitable and accessible. And so previous ideas that have been explored have been adding questions to the ECIS survey about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and also just modifying OIE and making sure that there is student support there so that students feel comfortable coming forward if they have a poor experience in a classroom related to inclusion. So that is a little bit about that topic. I can also talk a little bit about test optional admissions, which is something that Senate has been working on, and we've had meetings with the admissions office. And so I think PSAC would be a great place to really dive into the research and the literature about what are the pros about test optional admissions, what are the pros about the ways that UT uses tests like the SAT and the ACT to plug students into student success initiatives, and if there is another way that we can still plug students in who need those student success initiatives and make sure that they graduate on time and not having to rely on the SAT and the ACT scores to do that. So that's just a little bit about those topics.
Yeah, and then the other two topics about making research opportunities more accessible. So we kind of realized that for a lot of students in liberal arts and in the sciences, they often are expected to work an extended period of time for free before they can maybe get paid or get any form of credit. And we realized that that meant that for a lot of students who need working jobs, those opportunities are not accessible. And so we want to see if we can find some more ways that students might be able to receive compensation so those opportunities are more equitable and more accessible for all students. And the last one about SSD accommodations. So that as we kind of moved into hybrid slash online education settings, some students came to us with concerns about how the different technologies that people are using sometimes don't allow for their accommodations. And so we're working with the Disability Advocacy Coalition to better understand how those needs might have changed.
Awesome.
Are there any questions about any of those or any feedback about any of those ideas?
Have you all thought about anything that would be a student-driven award for professors who do especially good job in inclusive classrooms? So that's something we had done at the business school, was to create a new award. We modeled it after something we saw at Stanford. And so it was a little bit on the, like what I think of as on the positive side of encouragement and recognizing faculty. Students felt like they did a really exceptional job.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea. I know in the past, the idea has been explored in giving professors an award who use open education resources, so like free material instead of asking students to purchase textbooks, which is in line with making their classrooms more equitable. I think just the discussion was, how can we have buy-in from professors so that they see the award as something great that they can put on their resume and, I don't know, potentially like a positive thing for tenure and things like that. So yeah, we can discuss that, but I think that's a great idea.
And Senate has a history of recognizing and awarding and rewarding, so you may want to build on the program that already exists. You all do a fantastic job recognizing faculty, so I think you've already started.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. We'll obviously continue these conversations every single month, so thank you for introducing them. Let's keep going. And yes, admin, please chime in as we mention them. We'll go with student life next. So anyone from that community would like to speak?
Yeah, I'll share a little bit about student life. We're meeting on Thursday next week to kind of nail down some stuff. But our initial thoughts are largely centered around housing, which is always a big issue. Thinking about affordability as well as kind of the practices for quarantining COVID-19 positive students, and as well as housing for gender non-conforming students were kind of some of our brainstorms. That was the most robust topic, was centered around housing. We also brought up some ideas around parent issues, or maybe even broadening that to non-traditional student issues or needs, and kind of overarching gender inclusive practices. So, like I said, we'll nail down something more specific that we can really focus on, but that's where our thoughts are at this moment in time.
Great, thank you.
Perfect. And last is health and wellness. So that would be me, Hussein, and Rosaline. Rosaline, do you want to elaborate on it? I don't mean to call you out on the spot.
Yeah, that sounds good. Obviously, a lot of what will be happening on health and wellness this year will be directly in relation to COVID-19 and its ongoing ramifications for our campus. So from where I stand, the main things that I want to be thinking about is especially mental health. As we are all increasingly isolated, expanding the CMHC's capacity, increasing the number of care counselors, the number of culturally specific counselors within the CMHC, increasing telehealth capacities. Other than that, I'm also interested in thinking about spread. So unfortunately, a lot of the spread that is linked to campus does not necessarily happen on campus. However, a lot of other universities have set a precedent of coming up with a code of conduct and figuring out ways to censor students who do violate coronavirus distancing policies. So Austin right now has a social gathering mandate in place that unfortunately we know is being violated at West Campus. So the University of Arizona in particular has a really specific, detailed, well thought out code of conduct that we could potentially base ours off of, but there is precedent. Pitt, Penn State, USC are all examples of universities that have started limiting and otherwise punishing students who do violate this code of conduct, since it is so related to campus health and campus wellness. Other than that, UT Outpost is a phenomenal resource. Nutrition is a huge thing for students right now, especially since it can be even more difficult to find ways to get to grocery stores. Austin is a food desert. And so expanding UT Outpost, creating more resources through that already existing phenomenal program. And then finally, just working with academic affairs to advocate on behalf of students with disabilities and just making sure that UT remains accessible for everybody.
The only thing I'd like to add is that we've been in contact with CMHC about the partial expansion already. And then also we'll be working closely with the reopen group to make sure that it's not overlapping, but it's still solving campus issues.
I might just really quickly tell you, you know, we have had, I don't know, Dean Lilly, hours of conversations around how to think about encouraging the proper behavior. And this tension between sort of punishment side of things, what we can and can't do given the way where our students live and where our jurisdiction starts and stops, which is sort of a more positive encouragement side of things. And so it's an ongoing conversation. We are trying to work more and more with the city to have the city enforce its rules. Many of those campuses, and I don't know everyone, but many of the campuses that have different stances have much different kinds of arrangements in terms of who owns the places where students live and where that kind of thing. So we're doing the best we can within the confines of the setup of our campus in Austin, I think. But I also am happy that in general, I think our stance has been much more toward trying to take actions that encourage students to be willing to get tested, to willing to report cases, and do better in terms of contact tracing and working on the spread. So the tension we're facing in some sense is, even if we could in some ways legally crack down on some kinds of things, there could, if it doesn't go right, we could have cases where students don't feel comfortable getting tested or letting us know that they're positive. So that's how we're thinking about it. It's admittedly complicated, and it's a trade-off. There's not any one, you know, kind of necessary right way, but it's a difficult, the issues are more difficult in part because of how our campus is set up.
For sure. Well, we will plan, we'll talk about it and figure out the best way to move forward, but thank you. Any last thoughts? I know we're hitting 10 o'clock right now, so thank you for your time, but yeah, if there's anything
I'll just add, so typically what I'll do is reach out and connect you all with a key resource based on the item or the topic that you're working on and with so that you have an expert in that area. I will also follow up with you all in terms of the structure of the meeting, whether or not we need special guests. So let's continue, and I know Annika will, but let's continue to work together so that we can prepare in advance and make the most out of all of our meetings. And I'm even thinking with introductions, let's adopt a format. So in our intros, you can perhaps add junior and a major. And so we can go much more quickly, or we don't have to have, you know, time for introductions and just let our guests introduce each other. So we'll talk more about structure and ways in which we move forward. Okay. Great job. Great job. Great presentation today. Winston, I know it's somewhat last minute that you were thrown in to facilitate. Great job. You did an excellent job. Hartzell, great job. Your first meeting as the president. So
Yeah. Survived one of them.
Yeah.
I woke up to big pile of poo on my kitchen floor. And so I thought this is the way it starts. Starts day two. So thank you for Winston for improving the average of my day.
No worries. My pleasure. Okay. All right. Okay. We'll take care of y'all. Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend. Be safe.
You too.